Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with
Sam Seary,
who stars in Once at National Theater from November 25th through 27th. Now, we're doing this ahead of time because there's only like 3 days of shows, so we want you to get in here, put it on the calendar, and make sure you go at least
mark
once.
It. Yep, at least once or twice. That's the sequel.
Exactly. Falling Even Slower is the sequel.
Or Getting Up Quickly.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Getting Up Quickly. And it's called Twice.
Yeah.
Oh, let's get it off back on the rails because it's going to go off. Actually, I think this is even better than where it was going. All right, cool. All right, so in case our listeners haven't, I think I saw it at Kennedy Center a couple times ago. Obviously seen and loved the movie. But let's say our listeners are hearing this fresh. Tell them what the story is about.
Okay.
If they've been under a rock.
Let's do it. So the story follows a character named Guy, who is a singer-songwriter who's given up on music because His mom's passed away, his girl's left him, he lives over a vacuum shop that he works at with his dad, and he's content with kind of going nowhere and doing nothing. And he plays his last song, and he meets a Czech girl, simply named Girl.
Guy and Girl, easy.
And she convinces him that he has too much heart and too much love and passion in his music to let it go. So over the course of 5 days, they are able to make a demo tape, and they also fall in love. And there's a bunch of characters that I think, like Guy, are stuck in their own right, and they are involved in this production of all this beautiful music, and through that music and through that journey, they're able to keep going too. So I think it's more than just a romantic story about guy meets girl, but it's a story of fathers and sons and mothers and daughters and, you know, friends and meeting
vacuum
new
cleaners.
People. Yeah. Vacuum cleaners and hoovers.
Hoovers and bars and shots.
Which I love. There's a line in the show where she goes, what's a hoover? Yeah. And funny enough, her vacuum, it is the brand Hoover.
Yes.
So I've always wanted to be like, well, it's on. Never mind.
I do. The vacuum scene's actually one of those hidden gems that I love. It does not suck. Take me back. When was the first time you encountered this awesome story once? Was it the movie? Did you
the movie. Okay. The movie, yeah. So
what were your thoughts the first time you saw it?
First time I saw it was I was privy to the frames. And I love the frames.
Right.
So when somebody told me they were like, oh, there's this movie with Glenn and all the music from the frames. So I sat, I watched the movie. The movie kind of inspired me to play music in the streets and busk. And
the busker.
And, yeah, to be a busker, which I did for years and years. And I loved the simplicity of the movie and the story and the music and how they, because I mean, a lot of those songs had been recorded before, but the frames are a rock band and,
right.
You know, they stripped everything away when it was just him and Marquetta. And I think that the air that they were able to put in the songs kind of reflects the story that they're, I mean, they don't really say a lot in the movie. They don't really say much of anything.
Except through
the music. Yeah. Whenever they can't say anything, his lyrics definitely say it for them. I never got to see the show. So I never saw the show. I knew it was happening. And of course, being such a fan of the movie, I was nervous because, you know, you don't want to go see Falling Slowly with like a tap routine and like some crazy musical that, you know.
Remix?
Yeah, exactly. So I was also at the time I couldn't afford doing anything because I was playing music in the subways in New York. And so there was no way for me to actually go see the show.
You were the guy that people saw on their way into the theater.
Yeah.
You were outside in the street.
Yeah.
Doing the real deal.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then they'd come out and be like, hey, you like that? Oh, sorry, we got to get our train, but here's a dollar.
But look at you now, baby.
Yeah,
come
now
to
I'm
National
doing
Theater.
It. Yeah. Now I'm doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So what's this production been like? Where are we now? Are we in rehearsal still?
No,
like,
no. We're right in the thick of it. Okay. The rest of the cast right now is in California taking some very needed time off.
So where are we on the tour?
We were in Scranton last. Oh. Before that, Syracuse, and before that, I can't really remember, man. after a couple weeks, everything starts to go.
But we're a few stops in.
We're in the thick of it, and this is the second leg, so it's the second season. We started the tour. We started rehearsals back in December. Cool. We did the first leg, and then I was lucky enough where 5 days after the first leg closed, and there was a 3 month hiatus, I got to go to Dublin and do the show for 3 months there. Wow. Over the summer, with the cast over there, and wow, got to meet some amazing people. Glenn came and got to have a pint and talk with him. And
you drank with the Glenn.
Oh yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. And there's those moments where you meet kind of like a hero.
Sure.
And you go, what do you want him to do? You want him to put his arm around you and be like, hey man, let's go in the corner and have a talk. And that's exactly what happened. But
really?
And in my head, I was really articulate and really, really laid back and cool. But most likely, I was just like, I love you so much.
Yeah.
Your music means so much to me. And yeah. I was just telling.
Alcohol will do that to your voice.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're really cool.
He's like, I just interviewed Kermit the Frog in the bar.
You're a pretty nice guy.
Look at that. We've cast the entire
show of Ones as the Muppets.
Really?
And
nice.
Guy is Kermit and Miss Piggy is girl.
Awesome. That's genius. Yeah. But how is he? How was he though?
He's a massive man, very tall, which I didn't. And when I walked into the bar to meet him, I walked straight past him and went straight to the bar and ordered shots. I was like, I can't just go up and say hi to this guy. And the first thing he said to me, he leaned over, he goes, fair play, man. He goes, it was like hearing Jeff Buckley sing my songs. And instantly my heart went,
wow, yeah. You said hallelujah.
He was the nicest, kindest, just gave you all the time in the world. And, you know, we've been able to slightly keep in touch afterwards, which is great. And he's always open. He's like, you know, if you have anything you ever want to talk about, he's one of those kind of people where you can just talk to him. And he's so supportive of the show.
So obviously, you know, I'm going to have to include this encounter in the piece. So I want details. So what was the name of the bar and what were you drinking?
So it was Maureen's, which is the bar in the back of the theater in the Olympia.
Okay. In Dublin.
In Dublin. And we did the show and everyone thought that he was going to come on stage, but no one knew he was actually there. Mm. So I kept coming off stage going, Donna, the stage manager, Donna, is he here? Yeah. And she goes, no, he's not here.
You couldn't feel his presence.
Yeah, no, and there's a line in the show where we do one of the songs in the recording. He goes, did you write that? And I wanted to be like, no, he did.
He's got to stand.
So they said after the show, they're like, go to the bar. He's there. He's waiting. Go have a drink with him. So we sat. We talked about music. He told me the entire saga of Once, all the little details that I never knew.
Once upon a time.
Yeah, once upon a time. You know, and we drank Guinness, of course.
Of course.
Obviously.
And I was going to be upset if you did.
Yeah,
you
right. We had a couple buds. And
some imports.
Yeah. Heinekens, obviously. That's all you drink when you're in Ireland.
Yeah.
We had some amazing Guinness and great conversation. And it was a very surreal moment.
So what of that? What piece of that? Bring it back to the play. Because that's why people clicked on this button.
Yeah, why not?
To listen to this.
Well, sure, let's talk about that thing.
Yeah, they can Google your London, Dublin picture. What sort of that do you think did that? You know, obviously a cool moment in your life, but did you bring a piece of that to the show each time? It feels a little more authentic, probably.
I think when I was there, they would sit. I'd sit and talk with the cast, who are all real Dubliners. You know. And they would just explain to me how things were, how certain lines I never understood and moments of the show I never understood. And being around the people made it so much more authentic. I was able to speak with Enda Walsh, who wrote the play, and he kind of cleared some things up for me. And it, yeah, definitely influenced coming back on this leg. And I think the show's in this really cool place now because it's the same director that directed this leg also directed us in Dublin. So
cool.
and directed the first leg of the tour. So Sean Pechnek, when we were there, he soaked up a bunch of stuff. So when we rehearsed this leg of the tour, he was able to bring a lot of that in and go, guys, this is why this is said this way. This is why this song needs to be played like this, or this, you know, this joke. I mean, there's jokes in the show that will never, we here will never understand, but over there, you mentioned Fair City, they lose it. The soap opera over there, they lose it.
Do you say the line and just, and all of a sudden you're, whoa,
what? Yeah,
why
well, the
laughing?
Second they said Fair City and the whole crowd went, whoa, you know, I definitely
there you go,
laugh.
DC people. If, right? React to Fair City. And
react
you'll,
to Fair
you'll
City, guys,
cool.
And you'll be just like Dubliners.
That's fantastic. Awesome. All right, your guy. Who's girl?
Girl is played by the fantastic Mackenzie Lesseroy.
Okay. What makes her so great to work with?
When we auditioned, I was just remembering the audition. So I flew in from Bermuda, where I was working on a cruise line there, and I got to this audition. I messed up the song, but when I got to the scene, I read with her. And I remember walking out and going, listen, I don't care if I get this, but she better get this. Amazing. Yeah, she's amazing, playing piano and a voice like an angel. You know, my voice sounds like a, you know, it's been through the ringer. Her sounds like
you're
like
down in purgatory. She's in angelic.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think what she brings is, I mean, she's for someone that she left school to do this show. She was in the middle of Boston Conservatory.
Okay.
And she's 20, you know, about to turn 21. And for someone at that age, picked up straight from school. So there's not a lot of life to have in there. She brings that to the show. This, I think, girl needs to have a maturity about her and a worldliness about her. And I think Mackenzie does bring that and has really brought even more of that this leg around. And she is hard up there. She is, you know, she is direct, but there's a intense vulnerability, especially when she plays The Hill. And I mean, the easiest person to fall in love with every night,
yeah.
I guess, is a great way to say it. You know, and it's definitely a privilege to do the show with her.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You're two, guy and girl, they're two character arcs. Where do they sort, like, as audiences when we're watching there, you know, as we chart their sort of internal journey throughout the show, where do they each start and where do they sort of, what do they each have to sort of grow into?
I think for Guy, the biggest thing for him is self-worth and realizing that the fear that he has, and he has deep fears of trying, because when you try, there is that there's a thing that you'll fail. And he's had so many terrible things happen to him in his life with his mother passing away, and I think he feels obligated to take care of his dad, and his girlfriend of 10 years left him. And I think he feels like if all of these things have happened to him, he's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And so just live your life, live out the rest of your life, you know, pass away and no one's going to remember your name. And I think he's okay with that, and that's sad in itself. Being content with nothing is sad, and what he finds is bravery and courage, and the fact that he's able to stand up. And there are moments in the show where in the beginning of the show, he would never say what he really wants. He never goes after what he wants. He kind of follows girl around and just does what she says, and he wants it, but with falling in love with her, you know, she kind of shuts him down in the beginning, and towards the end he calls her out on it and goes, you know, why, we're perfect together. Why aren't you gonna, and she answers with a basic, you know, like that thing that your mom does where she goes, like, why can't I do that? And she goes, because I say so.
Right.
There's this moment where she says something like that to him, and he flips out because he calls her on it, because that's not an actual answer and he's not gonna stand for that. So I think his arc is going from someone that's scared to someone that's brave. I could have probably summed it up all in that line there, but then
I love it. No.
And I think
you had to go on your own journey to get there.
That was my arc.
Why did it take so long? Because you say so. How about her arc?
I think hers is is a little more complicated. Yeah. She is somebody that feels the need to help everyone around her. And she's a mother, and her husband's left her, and she lives in this crazy apartment with these three roommates and her mother, and she's raising a daughter, and she meets this guy, and she knows that she can help him, and it's not about anything more than the music for her in the beginning, and then she slowly falls mm-hmm. for him as well, and I think she struggles with what she wants, which is to run off with this guy and make music together, and then what her obligations are, and the fact that her father was a musician who lost the ability to play, ended up, you know, committing suicide. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I whispered that. And I think she understands what it's like to grow up without a father. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't want that for her daughter. So she still has this husband and this unfinished love mm-hmm. that she mentions. And I think her arc is sad because it doesn't, the resolution of it is kind of impossible on either option. For him, if he goes after his music and moves forward with his life, he doesn't have a lot of ties, so he can go off and do whatever. She is tied to responsibility mm-hmm. and tied to real life
yeah.
and doesn't have the luxury of jumping in love, of following through with things. And I think her arc is someone that starts off very strong and very sure of herself and ends a little less sure and a little more inquisitive inward about what is she doing. Right. And is she ever going to help herself move forward?
Right.
And I think that arc is it's just so interesting to me. And I think Mackenzie does it in a way that is very much guarded,
nice.
You know, and you don't really get to see it happen until it all spills out, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Convoluted.
It's okay. No, great on both of them. Falling Slowly. Let's talk about the music.
Yeah, let's do it.
The song, I believe it won the Oscar. I mean, it's a great song. Why is it so magical?
Because it's so simple. I mean, that's the show. Why is the show so guy meets girl and they make music? That's the simple.
Literally.
I mean, that's the plot. And the songs are very rooted in their Irish home. Mm-hmm. It's lyrics that are pretty straightforward. They are struggling with toppings of hope. You know, they're songs of intense pain with injections of healing every once in a while. And I think that there's the way that he structures his songs, especially Falling Slowly, is that it's accessible, meaning it's very pretty, mm-hmm. and the melodies mm-hmm. are very pretty. But every time you listen to it, you find something a little sad mm-hmm. and something a little happy. Mm-hmm. And I think only the great songwriters mm-hmm. can do that, can make I can listen to Falling Slowly right. if I'm walking on a sunny day and I'm just feeling like on yeah. it. Like right now, I could watch the leaves. It's great. And then I can also listen to that song when it's raining and, you know, yeah. I'm feeling like nobody out there gets me, you
yeah.
know, and
that you had the choice, you made it now, man.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
rip it out. I can
exactly.
rip your heart out.
Exactly. I mean,
but
it's,
it also can be beautiful and like you can find
yeah.
hope in it. It's you
it's
can it's
so
whatever mood you're in, it kind
of
works.
Incredible. I mean, yeah. and I think that's most of the songs
yeah.
in the show. I mean, When Your Mind's Made Up is yeah. like, I love how he writes these songs that are, they start off very soft and they invite you in and then they just punch you in the
yeah.
gut and then they disappear.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a Glenn thing to do, to give you a little bit and then give you way too much.
Yeah.
And then give you just a little bit less.
Right.
You know, that's great songwriting.
And I'm trying, totally. And I'm trying to remember, you know, a lot of shows have the orchestra off the stage, but I'm trying to think, isn't a lot of
yeah.
the music played by,
well,
you know,
all the music is played by the
on
actors.
Stage. Yeah.
All. So we all play, so the set is a bar, it's a mm-hmm. pub.
And you can get drinks at it,
and you
right?
can get drinks, yeah, before the show, and at intermission, you can jump up on stage. And
so cool.
And in pubs in Ireland, there are these session players. They come, they sit in circles, they'll play music for hours. So the show opens with us coming out and just kind of playing some songs.
Just jamming.
And the cast is made up of some of the most amazing musicians I have ever. Like, when you hear these people just mess around before, like during sound check or something, it blows my mind. And there's a part where everyone dances and plays the song Gold. It's in an open mic. Everyone gets lifted up by this song, and they start stomping and and twisting around with their instruments playing. And Jen Chandler, who plays the bank manager, she's a cellist. And it's one of the most incredible things to watch someone with a cello strapped to her chest dance and jump around and play beautifully still. That's, I mean, that's class musicianship, you know. And there's a great thing that you play as a, we play as a band, you know, every night. And there's signals that you can pick up on, like if I was missing a capo the other day and I made eye contact with someone and then there was just a capo kind of thrown at me and you just grab it and you keep going, you know. And it's a immense amount of trust and immense amount of work, because you're not just focused on the character, you're focused on the music, and that's very, very complicated. And I mean, our swings are, the understudies for the show are the most incredible people. They have to learn multiple parts, right? So with this show, you don't just learn the parts, you have to learn that instrument. Yeah. So there's like,
so they're walking around the street with cello strapped to them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And but they can play six or seven instruments.
That's insane.
You know, it's a incredible thing. I mean, there are Baruchka, she didn't play accordion before she did the show. You know,
she learned it for the show.
Yeah, she learned it for the. I mean, wow. Christine Milioti, who played Girl in the original Broadway show, didn't know piano before she did the show, and she learned piano for the show, and that's an immense thing. There's an entire section of the show where there's this little scene where she plays a classical piano piece, and I think that's impressive. That's more than impressive.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, the show's coming around, it's the 25th through the 27th of November, so that's right around Thanksgiving. What are you thankful for being in the show?
I'm thankful for the show. I mean, I'm thankful that every night the show is therapeutic in a way, which, I mean, some actors probably aren't the best at saying, at least, like, you should never use the show to get through anything. But
right.
there are some shows where I just need to, I need to go through that, and I need to play those songs. And when the show's over, it's like there's a cathartic moment. Right. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
awesome. Well, what's the final pitch? Why should people come out?
Gosh, there's the final pitch.
Come see you once.
Once in a lifetime.
I mean, the final pitch is, it's if you want to laugh, cry, have your entire heart and soul be taken apart and put back together in a stronger way, it's the show to see. It's the type of show where you go in as one person and you walk out as somebody else. Not completely, but something very small has changed about you. And I think that's why seeing the show is not so much just because it's a great night out for theater and it's a beautiful show, but the fact that it is therapeutic and healing for a lot of people.
Right. Well, maybe one day someone else, you know, years from now, will be playing the role and find you in a bar and you'll put your arm around them, like, and say,
"Let me
come over here, little whippersnapper.
Let's talk about
you
stuff.
You want some Budweiser or some Guinnesses?" Yeah.
That's what we're going to be in a tiny little bar in the middle of America.
What would you tell that guy that after having gone through this, you put your arm around and you have to relate what this experience is?
I would just look at him and go, "Dude, am I right?" Yeah. And then we just take shots all night.
You don't need to say anything. Like in the show, you say it with the music, you say it with the
Guinness. Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Awesome.